This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we'll begin with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and hear his September 1st, 1950 episode titled The Soft Spot. After that, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and Hay is for Homicide, his episode from August 31st, 1954.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Soft Spot.
And so much for the news from abroad. Here in Los Angeles, two persons were killed and eight injured today in three separate automobile accidents attributed directly to the thick fog that has blanketed the city ever since yesterday morning. Mm. And according to the Weather Bureau, the fog which is rolling in from the sea will be with us for...
Fog, smog, everything's cockeyed.
Hello.
Philip Marlowe, please. Earl Hanley speaking.
This is Marlowe. How are you, Mr. Hanley? How's the newspaper circulation business?
Oh, both zooming, fella. Oh, look, Marlowe. Can you come out to my joint in Las Feliz Boulevard, 3810? I'd like you to work for me again. And you write your own ticket as usual.
No, thanks. They play too rough in your league, Hanley. Besides, it's a bum night to ride around in a cold newspaper truck watching out for hijackers.
No, Marlowe, it's nothing like that. This is personal business.
Oh?
Yeah, it's an old man who's disappeared. I'd like you to find him for me.
Still a dark night.
Double your fee.
I see a light, Mr. Hanley. Outside, the city was wrapped up tight in the kind of wet ceiling-zero fog that leaves you feeling damp and all alone. Hanley's joint on Los Feliz was an old English stone mansion, sprawling, smothered in ivy, and about as cozy and come hither as a scream in the night. Inside, I followed an aging, round-shouldered butler whose footsteps didn't make any noise along the type of high, wide, nice-cold furnished corridor you find only in museums. When we finally arrived at Hanley's study, however, things changed. It was a small room with bright lights, heat, and a desk cluttered with friendly bric-a-brac. Hanley himself was standing against the far wall, and for a moment, the contrast was jarring because the self-made man in shirt sleeves, built like a boxcar and chewing on a cold cigar, didn't at all match the collection of stiff family photos, 1890 style, that hung on the wall behind him.
Yeah, what is it, Marlowe? Hard to find the family resemblance?
From here. Your folks, Mr. Hanley?
Yeah. Oh. And left to right, my mother, she passed on a year ago, and he is a kid. My father, a lush, and my grandfather. He claimed to have killed more Indians than ever existed. All born and raised in a lot of nothing, named Walker Falls.
Couldn't hold you, huh?
Couldn't bring me back either, even when Ma died. I was only a little tech when I ran away, Mono. Couldn't stand my grandfather even then. Nothing but a rod and a bottle.
Bad combo. How about your father?
Oh, I wrote a few nice words to him when sister wrote me that Ma died. And I sent a fat check for flowers and a tombstone, but he never answered. Mm-hmm. Probably dragged the dough up. He never could save a buck on his own, they tell me. Anyhow, enough of letting our hair down, Armando. Let's get on to business. Sit down.
Oh, thanks, sure. You said someone disappeared, Mr. Hanley, an old man?
Yeah. It was a gardener here, Marlo. Name's Cooper, John Cooper. He's 60, 65 maybe, tall and skinny. Yeah, he got a fringe of curly hair around his ears. The rest is strictly cue ball. Yeah, he shoved off yesterday.
With what, Hanley?
Yeah, you catch on fast, Phil.
You know, it's my trade.
Yeah. Well, the stuff don't amount to too much. Half a dozen fancy silver drinking glasses, those,
goblets?
Goblets. Worth about 100 apiece, nothing that'll dent me. Also, I'm insured, of course.
Well, then the goblets mean something else.
They do. Let's call them a present from a lady.
All right, let's.
I want them back, Marlowe.
Why me? Why not the insurance company or the law?
No. No, that I don't want. And if you laugh when I tell you the reason, I'm going to punch you right square in the nose. Have some scotch.
No, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, drink alone, then, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Mm-hmm. It's this old Duck Cooper, you know. I feel sorry for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came in here one day last week, hat in hand, looking beat as an alley cat. So I gave him a job helping one of the gardeners, but I was on to him right from the start.
What does that mean?
He was a gardener like I'm a ballet dancer.
Oh.
Yeah, I could tell. And from there on, it got worse. First couple of days, he watched me and everybody else around here pop-eyed as a shoplifter loose in Tiffany's.
But you didn't fire him?
No, no. Well, I figured a few square meals, some sleep, a little dough in his pocket, it'd calm him down. So I just put a new master padlock in my trophy room and let it go with it.
That was your mistake, huh?
Yeah. But just so you don't think I'm losing my marbles, Phil, I better tell you about another mistake. But gonna have to make this short, dinner gets shut out.
Another mistake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15 years ago, Phil, I was in a spot just like this Cooper. Yeah, I was broke, hungry, mad at the world, and in a position to do the wrong thing. I did, and I got caught. The boss understood, read me the riot act, and let me go. Right, today it's my turn.
Want to laugh?
Not very much. Tell me, what have you got for me to go on?
Well, thin air. Ah, but you're good, Marlowe. You'll make out. The name and description I already gave you. All right, here's the rest of it, according to the servants. One, lived somewheres around Skid Row. Mm-hmm. Two, he never touched anything that kicked harder than ginger ale. And that he went for in a big way. Three, he had a buddy in his neighborhood who was teaching him how to whittle. You know, make stuff, carving wood.
Yeah, I know. And that's it, huh?
Well, that plus the fact that he smoked these pint-sized cigars, we found a pack of them in the overalls of one. Here they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're called Aces Up, made in a downtown L.A. shop, also on Skid Row. Oh, the address is on the box there. Could help.
Could. Mm-hmm. Well, see what I can do, Mr. Hanley.
Okay, Marlowe. Call me as soon as you get close, will you?
Sure.
Oh, and Marlowe.
Yeah?
I want those goblets pretty bad, but... take care of the old man, will you?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Also, Hanley, I think it's a pretty decent thing that
you'll have to excuse me, Mano. I got to change for my guess. I'll talk to you, huh?
I followed Hanley back along the museum corridor past the guests who included a spy beautiful lady dressed in too much black, chatting with a crisp item in banker's gray flannel who looked like he'd been born holding an hors d'oeuvre. I didn't see how they could have much in common with their host. But when the big front door eased closed behind me, I forgot about them and concentrated on finding a needle in a haystack. A needle in a haystack and a fog yet. Well, the tobacco manufacturer responsible for the handmade black rope called Aces Up was my first try. His shop was a 2x4 dirty glass storefront labeled H. Andrade in dry, peeling gold foil that flaked off when I opened and closed the front door. And what had to be the proprietor was alone, rolling cigars on a rickety table that was stacked high with damp, dark tobacco leaves. He didn't look up when I described the man I was after. Bastard if he'd seen him. A moment later, when he did turn his head my way to answer, I realized why.
I am sorry, senor. I don't see nobody. I am blind.
Fine start, huh? And for some cockeyed reason, like the fog or the kind of man I was after or the neighborhood of derelicts I moved through, which... could have used a few sprays of sweet air. Didn't get any better. Not at least for the next hour, during which I stuck to the wood carving angle and covered every possible tie-in I could think of, including a visit to a nearby home for retired men of the sea.
Looking for someone who's teaching a man to whittle.
That's right. He's teaching an old man named John Cooper. Ever hear of him?
No, can't say I have. But lots of lads here whittle. Why don't you have a chat with them?
Okay,
In the morning. They're all bedded down now, mate. Wouldn't want to pipe him out over a silly question like yours, would you?
No, Skipper. Let him sleep. Right there, the whittling went the way of Aces Up cigars, and I turned to my last hope. John Cooper's mania for ginger ale. However, asking about that in the cheap, noisy bars that dotted Main Street was even a sillier question. It gave all the local comics their big break. Finally...
straight ginger ale, you say, huh? Now, let me see. I get so many orders for it, you know. It could have been the time Carrie Nation stopped in, or Was it the night some joker who was eating pig's knuckles called for a finger bowl?
Now look, Bright Eyes. Let's work a little less on the gags and a little more on... Hey, see that guy over there in the corner booth, the little fellow whittling on that stick? You know him? Come on, come on. Here's five for your trouble. Who is he?
The name is Skeeter. Been doing his drinking and wood chopping here for 5 years.
Is he always alone?
Not always. Sometimes he has a buddy with him. Lately, an old ball he's trying to teach how to cut them poles.
Oh.
A guy who never orders nothing at all, so don't get
what
started.
What does Skeeter drink?
Skeeter?
Yeah.
Why, he always has bourbon and... Yeah. Bourbon and ginger ale.
Uh-huh.
The guy you want must drink Skeeter's chases, huh?
That figures. Thanks.
Well, don't mention it, Screwball. A profitable pleasure.
Only with thine eyes. Making me nervous. What is it, mister? Lose something?
Sort of. John Cooper.
Oh.
Have you seen him, Skeeter? He told me I could get in touch with him through you here at this bar. Said you were a friend.
And I am. Say, is he in trouble, mister?
Maybe. What makes you ask?
Because he didn't show tonight. And last night he was all out of sorts. Had something on his mind. Couldn't pay attention to the lesson I was giving him. Is it bad?
No, not if I can get next to him in a hurry. Tell me, Skeeter, do you know where he stays?
Sure do. A rat hole over on South Spring, number 2... Hey, wait.
Huh?
You ain't a cop, are you?
Oh, no. A friend, Skeeter.
Yeah? What kind of cigars does he smoke? Friend?
Aces up. Do I pass?
Uh-huh. It's 210 South Spring.
210 South Spring. Uh-huh. Thanks. So long, Skeeter. I'll get in touch if I need any more help.
Hey.
Sorry, buddy. I was in a hurry. I didn't see you.
You lost up my shoeshine, sweetheart. Where you running?
Get your mitts off. I said I was sorry. What do you want? The dime you invested in the shiny, your ears slapped down into the pockets of that zoot suit. Which?
Okay. We'll let it go.
I thought we would. So long again, Skeeter, and thanks. After I made my call to my client and told him how we stood, I drove the half a dozen blocks to 210 South Spring Street. The place was the kind of stale-smelling, beer-can-littered, dingy, two-story affair that made you wonder if the garbage collector got around anymore. When I knocked on the cracked glass front door that sported a laundry shirt cardboard that said rooms for rent and eyebrow pencil, I was ready for anything. And that's what I got. Puffy red eyes, bad teeth, smell of cheap gin, all in a cold cream shiny face that was half hidden by enough bleached blonde hair to stuff an ottoman.
Hey, handsome, I can catch my death of cold here. What's up?
You the landlady?
No, she passed out. Uh-huh. I was drinking with her, so I'll do. What do you want?
An old man named John Cooper. Is he in?
A skinny duffer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. I seen him earlier. It's that door back there, the one on the right. Hey! Hey, jockey! What do you want back there? Where are you going? What's the use? This way, mister.
Hey, was that Cooper's room the fella just came out of, last on the right?
Yeah, that's it. That louse probably swiped your friend's bottle. He's the kind. Mm. Empty.
Too bad.
You know, he drinks you under the table and then takes what's left.
Which in this case would be ginger ale. Cooper doesn't drink.
Yeah? Oh, what do you know about that? Hey! Hey, you got company? Hey, Cooper! Lights on.
Try the knob, huh?
You're kind of anxious.
Yeah.
It's your game, mister. He doesn't drink, huh? What do you call that spread eagle position on the floor? Napping?
No. Not with that knife in his chest. Huh? I call that murder.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, one of your favorite laugh shows and stars, My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball, will return to CBS this Saturday night. Formerly heard on Sunday nights, Lucille Ball and Her Favorite Husband will now be heard on most of these same CBS stations every Saturday night. Be listening this Saturday when Lucille plunges that favorite husband into a mad and merry mix-up over who is the town's best or worst-dressed man. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Soft Spot.
The old man.
man's body was rumpled in death like a discarded bundle of rags, loosely pinned at the center with a knife that had killed him. And as the frowsy blonde gradually realized he was dead, the look on her face was dumb, slack-mouthed revulsion.
Gee, death's an awful-looking thing, ain't it?
Ain't it?
Hey, don't touch him, mister. It don't seem decent.
Decency is strictly relative, sister. There's a scratch here on his neck. Like a woman's fingernail raked it.
Where? Hey, his locket's gone.
Locket?
Yeah.
This old guy wore a locket?
Yeah, I seen it on him yesterday when the cops hauled off that redhead from upstairs. This old guy was shaving and he came out in the hall without his shirt on to watch, and I seen the locket around his neck.
What did it look like?
It was a little square one on a gold chain. Now it ain't there.
Ripped off and in a hurry. That much old gold's not worth murder, even in this backwash. Baby, what do you use for closets?
Closets? Are you kidding? In this dump, you hang your stuff on the plumbing and like it. Why?
Well, then there's no place here that six big silver goblets could be hiding, I guess.
You couldn't hide a shot glass in this joint. Not for long, anyway.
Well, the old boy traveled light. There's nothing here but...
What? Hey, what'd you find? What'd you find?
Oh, this newspaper story on the table. Torn out of the day before yesterday's paper, it says. Nelson Root, wealthy Beverly Hills broker, dies in a freak car smash-up. Root is survived by his wife, former showgirl Evelyn Lansing.
Now, what do you suppose that old guy was saving that for? To have sold his shoes with, maybe?
Oh, sure. Now, look, as long as you get your brain in gear, tell me where I can find that guy who ran out of here.
Chalky?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, mister, I don't want to get mixed up in this. I just live here and
I'm back here. You're already mixed up in it.
Yeah, but that Chalky's awful hard, mister. I wouldn't want to cross
him. Now, listen, that old man there was murdered. Remember, it's for keeps. You tell me here and now or the cops down at headquarters. Come on, where does he live?
I don't know for sure. I think I heard once he's got a shack in the alley behind some warehouse over on San Pedro Street.
Which warehouse?
I don't know. Honest, I don't know. Hey, you might find out at Dooley's Diner. I think he shoots craps over there.
Okay. Thanks, baby. And do yourself another favor before you cool off. Call the police. It took a solid hour of devious back alley trails before I finally broke down the intimidated loyalty of the Skid Row Brotherhood with a well-placed $10 bill and got a bona fide lead. The thick fog that crawled along the alley. Chalky's shack had all the welcome home look of a wet gutter. It was wedged in under the hulking concrete base of an overpass like dirt under a giant fingernail. Sick yellowish light oozed out through a single tiny window, too murky to see into. So I did the next best thing and hoped that he was alone inside.
Who's there? Who is it?
I got a tip for you, Chalky. Dooley sent me. It's about the Johns. They're after you.
Cops. Hey, wait a minute. What's the tip, fellow? Hey, where are you?
Right here, Chalky.
Now stay where you are, Buster. I'll kick your head off.
Hey, what's the idea?
I want fast answers, Chalky. Nice straight ones. Why'd you knife the old guy tonight?
Knife the old... Hey, who are you? What's the idea?
I want answers, not questions, Chalky. Why'd you do it?
I didn't kill him. I never used the ship. He was already dead when I went in there. I lifted that locket off to the old coot, that's all, so help me.
Give me that locket.
I ain't got it no more. Ma Murphy's got it now. I hocked it already. She gave me 3 1/4 on it. Look, I got a buck left. If you want that,
you're
can have it.
You're lying, grifter. You're killing old man to get the trinket for 2 cents.
No, I didn't. I seen that guy with the big ears run out of the old coot's room, so I went up to take a look.
Wait a minute. Guy with big ears?
Yeah. He was a zoot suitor. I never seen him around before. I'd remember them flaps of his.
Oh.
He ran out of the old guy's joint in a big steam. What? Hey, now listen, buddy. He was the guy who done it honest. Ain't no doubt about it. He was the guy. Hey. Now, wait a minute. You ain't a friend of his, are you?
He is again. No reason, unless he was 10.
Oh, now listen, buddy. I never put the finger on the guy before in my life. But when it's protecting my own hide, I gotta...
Yeah, I could have been the finger. So long, Chalky, and drop dead. It was still foggy outside, but my own personal fog began to lift. Big Ears must have been tailing me, overheard me on the phone, and got to the old man first. But why? Why the clipping that old man Cooper had about Nelson Root's accident? Nelson Root survived by a widow. A widow? Holy smoke! Callahan of the Daily Star gave me half a dozen pictures of Evelyn Lansing Root, from her early cheesecake days right on up to the role of widow in mourning.
There was no doubt left. She was the lady in black, one of my client's dinner guests. By the time I'd driven through the fog out to Los Feliz again and up to Hanley's sprawled-out house, I'd lined the whole business up to where it made a twisted kind of sense. There was nothing left to do but nup it in his lap. I found him in his study.
What's wrong, Marlowe?
Maybe you better tell me.
Tell you what. Did you find Cooper or didn't you?
Sure. I found him. I found him dead.
What? The old man is dead.
You know perfectly well he's dead.
Come on, Marlowe, sit down. Have a drink, you'll be.
No, thanks. I covered a lot of ground tonight, most of it pretty slimy. Led me in a big circle that started here and ends here, and now it's late. We're both fairly intelligent. Let's give each other a break, shall we?
Go on.
Let's suppose that a man was in love with a woman, a married woman, who was tired of her husband.
So? So, she and the man arranged for the husband to die in a freak accident.
Yeah, that's right. And let's suppose a strange old geezer overheard them plan it and then disappeared.
Oh, that's rough. I imagine they'd have to find him and shut him up, wouldn't they? Or he'd blackmail him to death.
Possibly. And how do you suppose they'd go about that, Hanley? Hire a private detective, maybe? Give him a song and a dance about a theft, a trumped-up story about some missing silver goblets, maybe?
Maybe. Only he'd be much too reputable to do their killing.
Yeah, so they'd hire a professional killer, one with big ears, to follow the detective. And when the old man was located, the killer would step in and go to work with a knife.
And then vanish completely, because he'd be a good professional man.
Well, Hanley?
Well, Marlowe. Oh, yeah, that's a great yarn. Yeah, but a little fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, utterly.
Oh, good boy, that's the way I figure. Too weird to take seriously.
Only I'm going to make it stick. Yeah.
Marlowe. You try to embarrass me with a crackpot theory like that, and I'll make you the laughingstock of this state, do you hear? I'll have you hooted right out of the business. Because you don't have one shred of proof, Marlowe, and you'll never be able to get one. And what's more, you know it, don't you? Don't get your hands off me, Hanley! Oh, come on, Phil. Come on, come on. Let's have that drink now, and then you go on home and forget all about this, huh? Sure. Oh, after all, the old jerk was just a skid row drifter. He didn't belong any place. Who'll ever miss him? He was nobody, Phil. Get it? Mr. Nobody. He's no loss, so let's just forget it. Marlowe! Marlowe, wait a minute! Marlowe, come back here!
I had to get out. What made it even worse to us that I knew he had me. I couldn't even begin to prove the first word of what I knew was the truth. I couldn't sleep with it either. That was why an hour later I leaned against the lamppost back on Skid Row again. And looked across a lifeless intersection through the eddying fog at the gaunt flophouse where the old man had died.
Well, well, well. A wayfaring stranger in the night. Hiya, pal.
Beat it.
Wait a minute, wayfaring stranger. Couldn't you accommodate me to the extent of a match, or would that break your back?
Here. Keep him.
Thanks. Why don't you go home, pal?
Hmm?
Nothing happens here on Cooper Street after 2 in the a.m. As a matter of fact, nothing happens anywhere anymore.
Cooper Street. Cooper. That's one right out of the book. I'll bet $50 on it. 9 out of 10, they'll take the name of a street.
Huh? Who?
Never mind. You live around here?
You're kidding.
Where's Ma Murphy's pawn shop?
Hey, easy. Watch the lapels, pal.
Well, come on. Where is it?
Ma's joined us 3 blocks down on Filbert, downstairs, middle of the block. But there's no romance there.
I still got a good notion to call the cops. The idea. Getting me out of a warm bed in the middle of the night to give you a look at a cheap little locket. And all on a dizzy hunch, you said.
Yeah, a wild one. You know the locket I mean, Ma. Come on, trot it out.
That'll do you no good anyway, sonny. Can't sell it to you for 30 days yet. The law, you know.
Yeah, sure. But you've been winking at the law so long, you're blind in one eye, Ma.
Is that so? Well, here you are. Say, is it hot, sonny?
I'll know in a minute. It's the inside I want to see if it's... Oh.
What is it, sonny? Is something the matter?
Yeah, my hunch paid off, Ma. It's hot, all right. Hot enough to burn a guy to death. Here's my card. I'm taking this along.
What? Now, well, hold on a minute, you. Hey, stop. I'll call the cops.
Don't bother, honey. I'll call him myself. The lights were still on in Earl Hanley's study, so I pulled over and parked on the street and went up the walk on foot.
And as I moved to the door, the fog slid around me in thick swirls. When Hanley answered, his face was hard and ugly. He had a gun in his hand.
Our business is over with, Marlowe.
Not quite, Hanley.
What do you want?
I got a tag for our fantastic little Just Suppose story.
You're either drunk or stupid, Marlowe. I warned you once, now beat it.
Not till you've heard my punchline, Hanley. It goes like this. Suppose a wife died after 40 years of marriage and left her husband alone. A lonely, lost old man who's mellowed with the years. Suppose he doesn't have much time left himself and he knows it, but he's got an obsession. An old unhappiness he wants to set straight. He wants to see a fella, not cause any trouble. Just be around where he can look at him now and then.
Come on, get to the point.
Sure, this is the point, Hanley. Huh? Here. Here, take it.
Where did you get this locket, Marlowe? Where?
Just suppose it has your picture in one side and your mother's in the other. What then?
I gave this locket to my mother when I was a kid. Where did you get it? Come on, tell me.
It came from around the neck of a harmless, sentimental old man who was stabbed to death tonight by a hired killer. He'd never have turned you in or blackmailed you, Hanley. Because that old man was your father.
I had my own father killed. I ordered my own father's death. I didn't know it.
Yeah. Mr. Nobody, remember? Come on, Hanley, give me the gun. We can go now. Hanley went quietly. All the way, he kept a little locket clenched in his fist. But as I led him up the stairs of police headquarters, he broke loose long enough to shatter both his hands against the marble pillar. He wound up in a straitjacket. But it didn't matter much because when they picked up Evelyn Root, the lady in Too Much Black, she filled in the rest of the story, including a lead to Big Ears. When it was over and I was sitting outside in my car alone in the fog that pressed close against the windows, I could see nothing of the city. Nothing but the soft, swimming white mist which hid the black outlines of Skid Row. Funny thing, you know. Some people can get out of Skid Row, but Skid Row will never get out of some people.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Richard Sanville and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Bill Boucher, Vivi Janis, Verna Felton, Edgar Berrier, Peter Leeds, Nestor Paiva, and Paul Dubov. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time there were five masks. One for greed, one for cowardice, one for cruelty, and one for deceit. And they all covered a murder. But it was the fifth mask that really counted, because it uncovered the killer.
For some easy-to-listen-to music on Sunday afternoons, be sure to hear those favorites, the Symphonette and the Choraleers, which return to CBS this Sunday afternoon. The Symphonette brings you musical favorites from the lighter classics, played by a group of outstanding instrumentalists. The Choraleers sing rousing marches, popular songs of the day, and familiar music of the past. Hear the Symphonette and the Choraleers this Sunday and every Sunday afternoon on most of these same CBS stations.
To hear each and every star, leave your dials where they are, cause this is CBS, the star's address. Yes, CBS, the star's address.
Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, where next week you will hear Philip Marlowe an hour and a half later, Eastern Daylight Saving Time, on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Someone once said that murder is a fine art. There's a catch, though. If you're a successful artist, they hang your paintings. If you're a successful murderer, they hang you.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Even confidential investigators need a vacation. Sometimes they've been known to take one. The place I'd chosen was Vermont. The main reason for that was Jake. He was on vacation, too. He decided to come home and see if he'd been smart in abandoning Vermont to run an elevator on Madison Avenue. Say, Jake.
Yeah?
What's the verdict?
Madison Avenue.
Why? Is Madison Avenue dark and quiet like this?
Nope.
Is Madison Avenue surrounded by tall trees, cooled by gentle breezes, filled with the fragrance of unspoiled nature?
Nope.
Now, what's Madison Avenue got that this place hasn't?
Girls.
Well, you may be right, but... Or you may be wrong. That came from directly up the road.
Nice night for a hayride.
Is it?
Yep. Could have been a giggle.
A rather loud giggle.
Girls got very loud giggles sometimes, especially on a hayride.
Oh, Jake, stop pulling my leg. Hey, wait a minute. What's that in the road up ahead of us?
Hay wagon.
I refuse to believe it, but it is filled with hay.
Usually are.
There's a horse out in front of it, but where's the driver? Say, Jake, would he have gone off and left the wagon out in the middle of the road?
It ain't too likely.
Oh. I'm coming up on that wagon. That girl, if it was a girl, didn't giggle. She screamed. I'd better take a look around in the hay.
What for?
Anything larger than a needle. Yeah, there's plenty of hay up here.
Anything else?
No, I...
Mr. Craig?
I was rushing things. There is something else up here.
What?
A man. A very pale man.
What's he doing up there?
Nothing. Just being dead. He lay very still. His eyes stared up at the summer sky overhead, but saw neither the stars nor the moon. The moon that shone on him and on the metal handle of the knife that was buried in his heart. He was wearing overalls and a work shirt. His short hair outlined clearly the skull beneath. There was nothing I nor anyone could do for him.
Murdered?
Yes.
Anything on him?
No identification at all, Jake. We need a phone.
Past farmhouse, half mile back.
Well, let's go.
Think it's all right leaving him there?
He won't mind. The Vermont night was as quiet and peaceful as it had been before I heard the scream and a man died of a knife wound lying on a mound of hay. Nature doesn't concern herself too much about us and our doings, which is very bright of nature.
Got to turn off the road to get to that farmhouse.
Yeah. Oh, somebody ought to oil that gate.
Yeah. Whole house is pretty run down.
Jake, get down.
It ain't necessary.
Those shots.
Over our heads.
Her aim might improve.
Her aim?
Well, you can see her. Farmhouse window. This time it's not the farmer with the shotgun. It's the farmer's daughter.
Spoil a lot of stories that way. She's left the window.
Yeah. She knows she didn't hit either of us. Those shots were either a warning or possibly a yell for help.
How are you going to decide?
Well, if it was a warning, I don't think she'd have left the window. So it must be a call for help. Come on.
That was real logical, Mr. Craig.
Thanks.
Let's hope it turns out to be true.
There were no more shots, which did or didn't prove I'd been right, because shooting would be better once we were inside the house.
First time I ever heard of targets knocking on the door.
The lady may have had all the target shooting she wants.
Who's there?
Barry Craig and Jake. Hello?
Barry Craig?
Yeah.
And Jake?
Me.
Neither of you look very terrifying.
Is that bad?
No, it's nice. Please come in.
Thanks.
Please, make yourselves comfortable.
Nice room.
Rustic, perhaps, but I like it.
Do you like being a farmer? Or maybe I should say...
Farmer's daughter. Very much.
Almost as much as you like firing guns at strangers?
Oh, but I didn't know whether you were strangers or...
Or what?
Or dead men.
Maybe she was what she claimed to be, a farmer's daughter. But if she was, somebody's been telling me lies about farms. Her hairdo was sleek, as though it had been just applied. Her fingernails had a lot of professional attention. Her dress was so simple, it practically yelled Paris at you. And she didn't need any of these beauty aids. She would have been beautiful without them, but not nearly so expensive. You did say dead men.
Yes.
You often run across dead men walking around?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You think I'm crazy, don't you?
I don't think you're crazy at all. You've just got a peculiar vision.
I'm not sure I ought to be grateful for that.
Oh, forget I said it.
My name is Millie George.
How do you do?
This is, or was, my father's farm. He was very happy here until the dead men started walking.
And then?
He became one of them himself.
Your father's dead?
Over a year now.
You live here alone?
Well, I don't really live here at all. I have an apartment and a job in town. But I come here often. As often as I dare.
My fingers idly traced a pattern in the inch-deep dust on the table next to my chair. Inch-deep dust. Millie George was very lovely. She told her ghost story neatly, but she was also a complete liar. I think maybe we'd better skip the Walking Dead for a minute. There's something more urgent that's got to be done. Where's your phone?
I'm afraid there isn't one. Father never cared for what he called mechanical murderers.
Murderers?
He meant things that killed time, interrupted work.
I see.
Destroyed quiet.
I see. That's too bad.
Why do you need a phone?
Jake and I ran across a hay wagon some distance down the road.
Oh?
There was a man in it. He wasn't walking around like the people you've been telling us about. He was lying down, but he was dead anyway. If I'd been looking for a reaction to my words, I would have been disappointed. Millie George took the news with not a flicker of anything except polite interest. But I wasn't disappointed. I'd expected that reaction. The police like to be told about stray corpses.
I suppose so. I think the gardeners have a phone.
Where would I find them?
Well, their house is about a quarter of a mile further down the road.
Oh, good. Jake.
Ready.
By the way, this man, what did he die of?
A knife in his heart.
Oh. Suicide?
The angle of the knife's entrance wouldn't be right for suicide.
Oh, then it was...
Murder.
How dreadful.
Yes, terribly dreadful. So long. So far as Millie George was concerned, murder belonged in pretty much the same category as a run in a pair of new nylons. You said how dreadful and bought another pair. You couldn't do exactly the same thing with a damaged life, though.
Mr. Craig.
Yeah?
Millie George said the gardener's house, the one with the phone, was down the road that way.
That's what she said, Jake.
Then why are we going this way?
I want to take another look at that hay wagon.
Once wasn't enough?
I think maybe there's been a change.
Less hay?
Less corpse. It was a nice road to be taking a stroll on in the cool evening. It would have been an even nicer road if there hadn't been a hay wagon in the middle of it.
Still there?
Yeah. The horse must be getting lonely.
Being a farmer, you get a wrong angle on horse. You don't think being a horse's chum is romantic.
I'll never say hello to a horse again. Excuse me.
You're getting pretty spry at climbing hay wagons, Mr. Craig.
Just practice, that's all.
Mr. Craig?
Hmm?
Count in the hay up there?
No, just confirming, I guess.
Less corpse?
No corpse. I'd thought back at Millie George's house that the shots might have been a warning or maybe a call for help. I knew now they'd been neither. What they actually had been were distractions.
Mr. Craig, maybe he wasn't really dead.
Jake, they don't get any deader.
Ain't likely you'd be fooled. Somebody moved him out of there.
Yeah.
Well, what for? Can't be many folks enjoy dragging corpses around.
Whoever dragged this one maybe didn't enjoy it at all.
Well, what was he trying to do? Save undertaker's expenses?
Maybe he was trying to save his neck. I got down under the hay wagon and said goodbye to it. We wouldn't be coming back that way.
Mr. Craig.
What is it, Jake?
Funny thing about city people, they like to walk.
Oh?
They do it deliberate, even when they don't have to.
Well,
Country people hate to walk.
But, Jake, we've got to get back to that farmhouse.
With the girl in it?
Yeah, Millie George.
We're hoping that this time maybe she won't shoot over our heads.
We're hoping that this time she won't shoot at us at all.
And for this, we're wearing our feet down clear at the ankle.
Oh, it's not as bad as that.
It's worse. I got short ankles.
Oh.
Mr. Craig, I can tell you right now, she don't have a phone.
I know, but by this time, she may have something else.
Do I want to know what it might be?
Not in your condition, you don't.
Thanks.
We didn't have much farther to go, which was just as well. Jake had started groaning at every step. Next to Jake's snores, Jake's groans are the surest recipe for punctured eardrums.
Oh,
you can stop groaning, Jake. We're at the house.
If I got strength enough to lift my head. I am at the house.
Think you can make it inside?
Oh, dear. I can try.
Fine. Jake. It doesn't look as if anyone's going to invite us in.
This don't make me feel bad.
We'll go in without an invitation.
Now I don't know how I feel.
Find out later. Well, somebody left the lights on.
Wasn't a Vermont man. Quiet.
Yeah, let's try the parlor.
Anything for an excuse to keep a walk in.
I suppose this is the parlor.
Nobody in here. It's the parlor.
I don't like this much. But the only thing left for us to do now is sit out.
Excuse me while I cheer.
Well, what are you waiting for? Go ahead, Grandpa. Cheer.
Company.
So I notice. Kind of thing you're liable to run into in old houses. They come out of the woodwork, I think.
Don't try to insult me, mister.
Why not?
Anything you're liable to say is liable to be true.
Don't be foolish. I don't use that kind of language.
You also ain't using the kind of language I would like to hear.
What language would that be?
The one telling me where the baby is buried?
A boy or a girl, baby?
Jake.
Oh, that grandpa's a joker. Grandpa could easy get his head knocked off.
Put the gun down, son, and Grandpa will be glad to tangle with you.
I ain't putting no guns down. And when I say baby, you know what I mean.
You mean something worth money?
Oh, you are a bright one. Okay, so where is it?
Even if I knew where it was, I wouldn't tell you.
Why not?
You've got the wrong RH factor.
Wrong? Well, supposing I could get a hold of the right one.
It wouldn't buy you the time of the day from me.
Language like that's got guys killed before this, mister.
So have guns like that.
It's just kind of fancy, but it ain't very productive.
What makes you think I know anything about the baby?
You're in this dump, ain't you?
I'm in it.
So what are you doing here? Looking for a beer?
It so happens I'm looking for a corpse.
Well, you're gonna find one. Your own. Only ain't gonna be in no condition to appreciate it.
Funny thing, you didn't show any interest in the corpse I'm looking for. Whose it might be, say?
Mr. Corpses is dead. Hey, don't bother me. It's the live operators you gotta keep in mind. Like you and Grandpa.
How about the girl?
You just leave her out of this. She's for me.
Oh? And why do you think I was called in?
Hey, wait, mister. You trying to tell me you was called in by...
By the girl, yes.
That don't smell so good.
Neither do you. Let's call it a draw and go home.
You were saying the girl brought you in, huh? Okay. We find out fast. Hey, sugar! Come here, sugar. This joker informs me you brought him in on a deal. That so?
No.
I had a long look at the girl who'd come into the room. It was fun while it lasted. She was worth looking at. She was beautiful, non-rural, undoubtedly expensive, and she was not Millie George.
Well?
Call it mistaken identity.
Oh, cut it out, Dina. I don't know what you think he said, but it wasn't very funny.
It wasn't?
It wasn't.
Oh.
This girl probably is on your side. She's not the one I was talking about.
You mean there's been another babe around?
Oh, honey, he must mean Joey's wife.
Why don't you forget you ever learned to talk, Dina?
That ain't a friendly attitude.
I ain't feeling friendly. Joey makes it out of the pen, ducks for cover here, and a counter here is where he buried the baby.
Banks wouldn't like you calling their money baby.
Well, I don't like banks.
So it was bank money. Thanks for telling me.
Who told you? Never mind. To resume. Joey gets here, and the first thing anybody knows, he winds up with a knife and a ticker. This is bad.
It ain't good.
Shut up.
You can't say that to a Vermont man.
Why not?
I don't rightly remember.
Well, get in touch with me when you do.
What sale?
Now, will you lay off? You guys trying to confuse me or something? Joey winds up with a knife and a ticker and no dough.
Look, ain't you forgetting Joey's wife?
Hey, yeah. If she was around here, maybe she met him even before we got here, grabbed the dough off of him, and then handed him a knife, huh?
Fine wife.
Nah, she never liked him so much. After she found out he was a bank operator.
She was prejudiced against banks?
She was prejudiced in favor of banks.
A narrow-minded woman.
So, I'm thinking maybe she's the one we got to get our hands on. Now, when did you see her?
A little while ago.
Where?
Here.
Well, she ain't in the house. We went all through it. If she knifed Joey and scrambled a dough, we better get after her.
Brady's a scream, ain't he?
Don't disturb my mental processes, huh? There wasn't no car around before, which means she must have headed for the village and railroad station. Okay, now we know where we're going.
Oh, I think we do.
That reminds me. What about you guys?
Oh, we'll hang around and play some pinochle. I've been wanting a good pinochle game.
Dina, what do you think?
I think you're a big dope.
Oh, what kind of remark is that?
Oh, you believe too easy. Joey's wife would maybe stick up Joey, but she wouldn't take the bank's money.
Yeah, could be right. Yeah, but maybe...
These characters, you ought to...
Don't pay any attention to her, Brady. She's a bitter woman.
Just shut up.
You know what I say? I say get rid of them, and then we'll have lots of time to find the money.
Hey, you could be right.
She could also be wrong.
All right, so she's wrong. What do I lose if she's wrong?
Mr. Craig's life and mine?
In my line of business, I can't afford to be sentimental. If you die for nothing, I shall be sorry. But not very sorry and not for very long. Okay, here.
Please, Brady.
Huh?
Not while a lady's in the room.
Oh. Excuse me, Dina.
Sometimes I think you ain't got no manners.
I said, excuse me. There's a nice, refined girl. You know, never even packs a rod. Well...
Brady.
Yeah?
You're an idiot.
Well, that could be.
You but... think Dina's really going to wait for you? In that car outside?
Well, sure. Me and her's personally very friendly.
That was before the bank money came up.
Why shouldn't she wait for me?
And share your execution?
Who's getting executed? I knock you guys off. We find a door, we get out of here. Nobody knows who's even around.
Dina gets out of here, you mean? You don't. The cops will pick you up in a few hours.
Hey, you keep saying she won't wait for me.
That's what I keep saying, because it's the truth. Would you like to test her before sticking your neck away out?
What kind of test?
Fire 2 shots into the floor.
What for? I got nothing against the floor.
Oh, forgive me. You haven't got brains enough to be an idiot. Fire these shots, and it'll sound to Dina as though you shot Jake and me. Then if she waits for you, fine. You can go ahead with your original plan. But if she doesn't wait, if she scrams as soon as she hears those shots...
Hey, it's an idea. You know, it's even a good idea. Okay, boys, just don't get alarmed. Yeah, you shouldn't have insulted Dina. She's okay. So just for insulting her, I'd kill you anyway.
Shut up. Listening, Brady?
Hey, Dina! Hey, Dina!
A man betrayed.
Craig. Craig, you was right. I feel terrible.
You should.
But I don't understand Dina crossing me like that. What'd she get out of it?
How much money was in the bank job?
Around 30 grand.
She gets 30 grand out of it.
Huh? But she...
Were you and she together all evening?
Well, no, but...
You came down to this house? Why?
Well, we figured this is where Joey's going to head. Once we hear he has departed from the pen. But Joey don't show. Then you tell me Joey is now a corpse.
Pretty plain what happened. One way or another, Joey latched onto a pair of overalls and a work shirt, plus one wagon filled with hay. He dug up the money from wherever he'd hidden it and headed for this house. But before he got here...
He runs into trouble.
He ran into Dina.
Now it begins to clear up. And Dina takes him for the dough, huh?
She takes him.
I could have figured it out for myself.
Yeah, all you needed was Mr. Craig's brains.
Better he should have them. What would I do with them?
You've got a point. And so is your head.
Please, Grandpa. Dina does not wish to share this here dough with me, so she tries to get me to knock you guys off, then get picked up by the cops while she's traveling very fast in my car. Hey, this is revolting.
It is.
You know, you do very good guessing.
No guessing.
No? How'd you know Joey was an escaped con?
I mentioned the fact that he was pale and that his hair had been cut short. That was enough. Farmers don't work indoors in the summer. They couldn't be pale. And why did Joey dress up like a farmer? Because he wasn't one. Escaped convicts are pale, have short hair, and seek a disguise.
You know something, Craig? You're so smart, I'm beginning to worry.
What about?
What kind of security is us criminals going to have if private eyes like you go around being smart all the time?
The same kind of security you've always had. No security.
Just don't dwell on that there. I got something else to worry about. I got to figure out a way to get hold of Dina before she scrams out of the country with that dough.
But Brady...
Huh?
Dina doesn't have the money. Brady had a little trouble with this. Even Jake began to look worried. As far as I was concerned, I hoped. Because I could turn out to be wrong. And being wrong, in a case of this kind, was only one short step before being dead.
But you figured it all out yourself.
Logically.
That Dina was the one who knocked off Joey and took the dough.
What you're forgetting, Brady, is that there can be more than one logical explanation for anything.
Huh?
He means just because something's logical don't prove it's true.
Oh.
And then, of course, logic can be twisted. As twisted as your mind, Brady.
You leave my mind out of this. It's got its own troubles. Please explain.
Well, Joey was a desperate man running from the police. He was also a man owning $30,000. He was finally a man in a hurry.
So?
How would Dina have persuaded a man in those circumstances to let her get close enough to him to stab him?
Well, maybe...
There's no way.
Well, somebody got close enough to him.
Of course. Somebody who was armed with a weapon that was dangerous at a distance. A gun, say.
Oh, so Dina...
No. You yourself told us Dina never carried a gun.
Joey's wife.
Wouldn't have needed to take the chance of killing him on the road. She could have waited till she had him here.
You know something? I said you were so bright, I was beginning to get worried. I ain't beginning no more. I'm worried.
So you admit you were the one who stabbed Joey and took the money?
Yeah, sure.
Dina scrammed just now because she was afraid you didn't intend to share the money with her, but instead would kill her the same way you'd kill Joey.
Could be.
She realized you'd hidden Joey's body to gain time for doing just that.
That won't do her much good. I know where she goes when she's scared. But before that...
You can't shoot us.
Why?
Well, I don't know, frankly, but give me a little time and I'll think of something.
Too bad, Grandpa. I ain't giving you no time at all.
Oh, for a fellow who's just been shot, I feel fine.
You weren't shot, Jake. Come on in, Miss Millie. I spotted her behind those drapes a long time ago. I was looking for her. The trouble with you, Jake, is that you spent so much time thinking about the farmer, you forgot about the farmer's daughter. It didn't quite end there, though. The police removed the debris, put out a pickup for Dina, and then...
Barry.
Yeah?
I really am a farmer's daughter.
I know.
So?
Yeah?
How about some country cooked ham?
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Hay is for Homicide, was written by Louis Vittes. Next week, it's the strange story of Ghosts Don't Die in Bed, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
We call next week's story, Ghosts Don't Die in Bed, which is a true saying. It's also true, of course, that they don't die anywhere else, because they're already dead. All except for one I run into when... Good night, folks. See you next week.
The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you transcribed an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Directed by Arthur Jacobson. Also heard, Harley Bear, Joyce McCluskey, Jack Moyles, and Bebe Janis. John Lang speaking. The aviation age of America is now in progress and calls to young Americans to keep in step by becoming members of the United States Air Force. If you are a high school or college graduate between the ages of 19 and 26 and a half, single, and in good physical condition, then you may be eligible to win your wings as an Air Force lieutenant. While in training, you'll learn to fly as pilots with the latest equipment and the best instructors. Investigate now. Visit your Air Force recruiting station for additional information. There's another exciting Dragnet adventure tonight on most NBC radio stations.
That does it for this week's Case Closed. Hope you enjoyed the shows. You can find more from Barry Craig, Philip Marlowe, past episodes of this show, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button, all at relicradio.com. If you do enjoy this and all the shows, click on that donate button. If you would, your donations make all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.